We're starting here on the top of Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Akash, Shogabe Amita, Lo Yina Anenu Biyado. If you have straw on the bed, you shouldn't move it actively with your hands. Ila Mina Aneyu Bigufo. You can move it with your body. So here the problem is that the kash, or the straw, is otherwise mukse, but now he wants to use it for bedding. If he doesn't designate it as bedding for the fact, then he has a problem because he has muksa on the bed, but he wants to use that as his mattress. So how does he deal with it? He can't move it directly. What he can do is move it to the achayad or tiltul min atzad. So he's allowed to be menaneh b'gufo. He can lay on it and move it around. If it was feed for the animals, oh shayalav kar osadin, or if he had a pillow or a sheet over it, minano biado, then it's no longer muksa. And therefore, he can actively move it with his hand, because it was already before Shabbat something that was not mukse, either because it was animal feed, or because by putting the sheet on it, he indicated that he was going to use it for bedding for Shabbat, and that gives it a designation of not being mukse on Shabbat. The first instance in the Mishnah is a case where he didn't make any of these premeditated decisions about the straw, and therefore he has to deal with this straw, which is mukse on Shabbat. There is a machloket Rishonim, which we discussed earlier in the Masechta, about what really is allowed here in terms of tiltul min atzad. The Mishnah here only permits you laying on top of it and moving around. What about using your elbow? What about using any other tiltul min atzad? Is that permissible over here? So the Rishonim disagree as to whether here you have to do a bigufo. You have to be engaged in the activity, like laying down, and then through the laying down, you're allowed to move the straw. Or is it any tiltul min atzad that is permissible over here, as long as you don't engage directly with the straw? Okay, machbesh shel balabatim, the layman's press, matirin. You're allowed to open that up on Shabbat. Alo kovshim, but you can't close it on Shabbat. Obviously, you can't do the pressing on Shabbat, so closing it is not necessary or something that you're not permitted to do on Shabbat. But to release the press so that you can get the clothing inside, that is permissible on Shabbat. Vishol kovshin, the launderer's press, the commercial press, lo yigabo. You're not allowed to touch it. It's completely mukse. I would have thought it's mukse machmat chisaron kis. Rashi, on the other hand, says, because it works so well, and when you close it, it tightens so tight that when you open it up, it'd be domed l'stira. It'd be like undoing bone and stira by putting together and undoing it, and that's the problem with getting involved with this commercial press. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, imaya mutar mi'erev Shabbat. If already it was partially released before Shabbat, matir et kulo v'shomto. You can release the remainder of it, pull it out, and take your begadim out. The way their presses worked was there were two boards or two pieces of wood. One of the pieces had pegs on it. The other one had holes, which inserted into the pegs. And then you locked the upper board into the lower board by tightening, I don't know whether they had wing screws or some sort of peg that held the other one in place. So that's how they pressed their clothing, by putting it between the boards and locking it in place. So here, if you want to release it to get the clothes on Shabbat, again, if it's a layman's press, then that's not a problem because it's not so significantly tightened, and therefore the releasing of it, it's not called matir. That is not true by the commercial press. Obviously, to put clothing or to close it in it is asur no matter what, because there's no purpose for that on Shabbat. That's it, uvda dechol, that's bone, everything that could go wrong in terms of placing the clothing in there. According to Rashi, there may not be binyan and stira b'kelim. Tosfot believes that you can have binyan and stira b'kelim when you're building a new kli, when you're starting afresh. Rashi generally doesn't think so. He says en binyan b'kelim. That's generally what Rashi says everywhere else. Over here, you can see Rashi saying it's dome l'stira, which means that he's clearly not saying that it is binyan or stira b'kelim. It just looks like binyan and stira, and that's how Rashi gets around that problem. Amar Rav Nachman. This is a statement we saw earlier in the Masechta on Kuf Chav Gimel from Rav Nachman, which is Haipugla milamalo lamato shuri. Milamato lamalo asir. You have this radish. After it was picked, you reinsert it into the ground in order to store it. If you store it right side up, that means with the leaves upward, the wider end upward, the narrow side towards the bottom, then it's mutar to take it out on Shabbat. Milamata lamalo, if you insert it into the ground upside down, that is the leaves down, the wider end towards the bottom and the narrow end towards the top, asir, then it's problematic. The difference being that there is dirt covering over the radish. If the radish is right side up, then the wider end of the radish is on top, and as you pull it out, you're not really moving the dirt around it, because the wider end is already on the top, and as you pull the remainder of it out, it narrows, so it doesn't move the dirt that's above it. On the other hand, if it's upside down, if the wider end is at the bottom, and the narrow end at the top, as you pull out the narrow end, because it's widening as you pull it out, you're lifting dirt out of the ground as you do that. So that is why it's a sur. The problem obviously being here that our Mishnah seems to indicate that tiltul min atzad is lo shmei tiltul. That when you pick something up in an indirect manner, that's not called tiltul. Yet over here, Rav Nachman's statement seems to indicate that tiltul min atzad is shmei tiltul, and that's why he's not allowing you to take the radish out when it's upside down, because you're going to move this dirt in a tiltul min atzad. Amar of Adar bar Ava, Amrei Beirav, Tanina delok Rav Nachman. We have our Mishnah that's not like Rav Nachman. Our Mishnah being the Mishnah we just read, Akash. We conclude from our Mishnah that tiltul min atzad lo shmei tiltul. That when you do indirect movement of an object, that's not called tiltul. That's not called the problem of moving mukse on Shabbat. Shma mina against this position of Rav Nachman. We're back on Kufchav Gimel, talks about the fact that Rav Nachman actually changed his position, and that we have a steering email internally within Rav Nachman's position. I'm Rav Yehuda. Hani pilpule, these peppers. Peppers here are not like green pepper, red pepper, but pepper here like peppercorns. Medak chada chada bekata de sagina. You can crush one at a time with the handle of the knife. So if you do a bekata de sagina, it's shori. Tarte, if you do two of them, then it's asir. Then it's problematic. Rav Amar, kevin de mishani afilu tuvanami. Since you're doing it in an unusual manner, you can even do more than one. Because you're using the kata de sakina, using the handle of the knife, which is not the normal way to crush this item. You'd normally crush it in a mill or in a mortar. So the fact that you're doing it in this unusual manner is enough of a shinoi to say that you don't have to do it one at a time. You can even do it with multiple peppers at once. What this is referring to and how it connects to our Gemara, Tosafot here deals with, he quotes first of all from the Shilto to Rav Achai, that suggests that this statement is made regarding Yom Tov, and not a reference to Shabbat. He rejects that assumption. He says, because the default status of statements made in this Masechta are that they refer to Shabbat, and not to Yom Tov. Unless it indicates otherwise, why would you assume something is speaking about Yom Tov? Then he has to answer the second question is, what is it doing over here? We just dealt with tiltul min atzad, and all of a sudden you're moving over to crushing peppers in an unusual manner. So he says, Elanir l'Rebbe d'hocho b'shavet ayri, v'gav d'ayri b'tiltul ayyidei shinoi, mighty le'hoche. So since we're dealing with tiltul by a shinoi, it's here, v'kula shmaita nami, mighty mila d'shabat tuva, afagav d'lo shaychin hocha kuleyai. It's going to bring a list of items that don't seem to belong necessarily, but they belong only because they're done derech shinoi. So it's an amalgamation, a gathering of disparate halachot that have some connection, which is that they're all done derech shinoi. But you won't find any direct thematic connection between the halachot that are mentioned over here. He does say in the end that on Yom Tov, that it would be mutar then to do it, even in a regular manner. And then Tosfot spends a lot of time about when you can do it on Yom Tov in a regular manner, because we learned before that on Yom Tov, you can only do things that would otherwise not have been able to be done before Yom Tov. Here, the crushing of the spices, why can't you do that on Erev Yom Tov? So he talks about two scenarios. One is that you don't know what dish you're going to make on Yom Tov, so therefore you didn't know what to prepare. So that's one scenario. Or the other possibility is that with certain spices, nifgamatam, that the taste would be somehow impaired by doing it a day before rather than doing it on Yom Tov. But otherwise he does allow it, and he mentions over here that you can do it in, he says, meducha shel evin ke'in shelanu shekorim mortar. You can do it in our type of crushing instrument like the mortar that we have. That's on Yom Tov. Again, on Shabbat, you have to do it derech shinoi. Here we have a machloket as to what is derech shinoi, whether just doing it with the handle of the knife is sufficient, or you have to do it one at a time as well. Amar Rav Yehuda, man desachi b'mayo, lingiv nafshei b'reisha, v'hadol lislich. One who bathes in the water, he should make sure to dry himself off before he gets out, and then get out. Problem is that we're afraid is that he's going to carry the water with him for amot in the Carmelite. When he exits the water, he's actually carrying the water on his body. So we want him to dispense of the water on his body, dry himself off before he walks, so that he's not carrying it Dalet amot in a Carmelit. Iyachi ki ganochit nami kadachi kocho dalet amot vasir. When he goes into the water, why don't we worry about it then? Also, he's pushing the water. He's moving the water when he enters it. Why don't we worry about the fact that he's pushing the water dalet amot in a Carmelit? Gemara quotes here as it did earlier in the Masechta. Kocho be Carmelit lo gazru. When it comes to kocho, we're not gozer inside of a Carmelit. Remember, a Carmelit is a din derabanan. It's a reshut derabanan. It would otherwise be not problematic on Shabbat to carry their meat de'oraita. the Rabbanan imposed in these areas that it's a karmelit restricting you from carrying, and therefore only when you are directly carrying are we going to worry about it inside of a karmelit. Kochol, where it's a derivative of your action inside of a karmelit, there we're not going to worry about it. So here, it's not you that's moving the water, it's the impact from you entering the water that moves the water. So that's a derivative result of your entering the water. There, we don't worry about it inside of a karmelit. Obviously, if it wasn't the karmelit, we would worry about it, if it was a reshut d'oraita, but here we're simply dealing with a reshut d'rabanan. He has cement, plaster, dirt that gets on his leg. You can rub it off on the ground, but you should not rub it off on the wall. You have to scrape it off. It got stuck to you. You want to scrape it, so you need some friction. So you do it against the ground, that's permitted. You do it against the wall, that's impermissible. Why wouldn't you do it against the wall? Because it looks like you're building, it looks like you're adding cement or plaster to the wall, so we don't want you to do that. Habinyan chaklaahu. That is a farmer's way of building. That's the agrarian way of building. Basically, that's a way that nobody would build. You don't build by wiping off cement on your foot, on the wall. That doesn't look like mechzeik bone. Ela omer rova, rova says just the opposite. Mikancho bikoto, ve'ein mikancho bikarko. You wipe it off on the wall, not on the ground. Dilma atilish ruye gumot. We have a bigger fear in the ground than we do on the wall. The wall, you rub it off, so some cement, something gets stuck to the wall, that's fine. Problem here is if you rub it off on the ground, you might come and smooth out the holes or the cracks in the ground. Something that we know that the Gemara is worried about, where they had dirt floors in their houses, and the Gemara is very worried about this issue of Ashvuei Gumot. Despite the fact that Rava holds like Rabbi Shimon who says Davar Sheinu Mitkavein is Mutar, it's clear here that it's Davar Sheinu Mitkavein, that you have no intention in being a Shvuya Gumot, you simply want to remove the dirt, cement, plaster from your foot. Despite that fact, over here we're Gazrinan, because as Tosavot says, Gazrina Ocha Kishe Asuk L'Kaneach Raglo, Ishkach Shabbat V'itkavein L'Shvuya Gumot. Because you're engaged in another activity that involves force, friction, you're going to come to forget that the fact that it is Shabbat, and then you'll end up being a Shvuya Gumot. Even though technically it's Dover Sheinu Mitkavein, the problem is that you're going to get so involved in this process because it takes effort, exertion, and because you become so involved, you forget entirely that it's Shabbat, and then you'll become engaged in a Shvuya Gumot, but there won't be Dover Sheinu Mitkavein, it'll end up being Mitkavein because you've forgotten that it's Shabbat. Despite the fact that Rav in general Paskins are going to be Shimon, nevertheless he goes there in this case. Itmar mar b'rei d'ravina amar echad zeh ve'echad zeh asur. So we have another statement here. Before we had a machloket between Abaye or Rav Yehuda and Rava as to whether it's the wall or the karka that's better to use. Over here we have a statement from mar b'rei d'ravina that you can't use either. It's completely asur. Rav Papa amar echad zeh ve'echad zeh mutar. Rav Papa says that both of them are mutar. Mar b'rei d'ravina b'mayim b'kanchile. According to mar b'rei d'ravina, how can you then clean off your leg? How can you clean off your feet from this plaster, this dirt? If he doesn't allow you to use the ground, he doesn't allow you to use the wall, what can you use? It says, b'kanchile b'kora. You can use a piece of wood, a beam that's out there, and you can rub up against that and remove this from your leg. Now we have a different statement again. Amar Rava, lo leitiv inish apume d'lechaya. Person, when they are sitting down, should not sit down on the lechi. This is going to come up much more in Erevin. It's really a case for Erevin. But if you have a mavoi, in which you're allowed to carry because they made a shituf mivaot, part of the requirements to have a mavoi be able to be used and to carry in it is that the exit from the mavoi has to have some sort of siman on it. Whether it's a lechi, which is a post, or a korah, something across the top, that either it's machloket in Erevin acts as a mechitz on that side, or acts as a siman or demarcation as to where the mavoi ends, to remind the person that they shouldn't go beyond this point into the reshut harabim. So the problem is this person or this individual comes, the lechi doesn't have to be so high, it'd be a post on the side of the wall. He decides to rest over there and sit on the lechi. They say, don't do this, because you've eliminated the reminder. By sitting on it, you're not going to have this signal not to do something, because something will roll away from him, something will fall out of his hand, and then he'll carry it back in, because he's missing that demarcation or that reminder of the lechi, because he's sitting on the lechi. And therefore he'll reach out into the reshut harabim to pull the item back without having this reminder of the lechi. So don't sit on the siman, because then it's no longer a siman. Vamarova, Lelit Sadeid Inish Kuba, person should not bend over on its side a Kuba cask, Dilma Atele Shvuye Gumot, because you might end up coming to Bima Shvuye Gumot, large barrel cask, shouldn't roll it on its side or push it onto its side, because you'll come to be a shvuye gumot, smooth out the holes or the cracks in the ground, fill the holes. The other possibility is that mitzadeh doesn't mean to push onto its side, but rather to stand up the barrel. And here you're trying to adjust the barrel so that it stands on a level basis. And by doing that, you might come to mishave gumot. Amarava, lo lehedek inish udra bapuma deshisha. Person shouldn't plug tightly a cloth on the mouth of a jug. Actually, over here says that the udra is a muchin shesot bimba piapach. It's the soft material, whether it's cotton or other soft material that you're using to plug the top of the jug. Dilma ate ledei schita, because you might end up coming to be sochet, because it's on top there. If it gets wet or so, you might squeeze it out. Or if you're plugging the top, and by using this as a plug, it plugs into the liquid, then it might cause schita, which we saw earlier in the Masechta back on Kuf Yud Aleph, the problem of plugging the wine barrels on Shabbat, misuch raita, the nizaita, which were those plugs that they pushed into the holes in the barrels in order to stop up the wine from coming out, that we don't allow, because it's a pasuk reshe that it could cause schita. Over here, it doesn't seem to be there's a problem with pasuk reshe, it's just a gzeira otu that you might come to doing schita. Amar of Ghana, tit shagabe bigdo. If you have this plaster cement that gets onto your clothing, before we discussed it on the body, now we're discussing it on the clothing, mikas keso mi bifnim, vei mikas keso mi bachutz. So we saw this mikas keso yesterday. That was with the linen baguette rubbing it together. Over there we asked whether that was to soften the baguette or to whiten it. Over here, the Gemara says that you can do it from internally. You can put your fingers inside the baguette and then rub it from the inside and cause the cement to crumble or fall off. But you may not do it from the outside. And Rashi says, when you do it from the inside, it doesn't look like you're laundering it. But when you do it on the outside, it looks like you are laundering it. You are cleaning it off. Now Rashi says, it's not real laundering. Because there's no water involved. The milabain, by definition, requires water in order to be a problem of milabain. Without water, there may be no isser of milabain. That's an interesting question. Back on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Bet, there's a toast a photo over there that discusses this issue about Malabain, whether you have to have water or what type of Isra can you be involved with in terms of Schita, what exactly are the requirements of these Melachot. If he got this cement, this plaster on his shoe now, what can he do? You're allowed to take it off or scrape it off with the back of the knife. Now here it's not clear. Gav Sakin could be, like we saw before, Kata the Sakin, it could be the handle of the knife, or it could be the dull side of the knife. But whatever it is, it's not the normal way to scrape something off. You're not using the sharp edge of the knife in order to scrape it off. That which is on his beged, you can scrape it off with your fingernail. What you can't do is rub it together the way that you would normally launder it. My lab, sounds from here, when you can't rub it, it means you can't rub it at all, which would be a problem for the statement that we just had before by Rav Kahana, who differentiated between rubbing from the inside and rubbing from the outside. When it says, lo, shlo yikaskes mi bachutz, el mi bifnim. When it says lo yikaskes, it means don't do it the normal way that they launder, which means from the outside. But if you did it internally in the, from the inside of the baguette, that would be fine. Amar Rabbi Yabel, Amar Balazar, Amar Rabbi Yanai, mi garin min al chadash av lo yashan. You can scrape off from a new shoe, but you cannot scrape off from an older shoe. Rashi explains why. Not the older shoe. Shukofo v'avi me'machet. Problem with an older shoe is that it's already worn the leather. And when you scrape off the cement or the dirt on it, you're also going to smooth out the leather. You're going to scrape some of the leather off. And that'll be nisra av me'machet because your activity or your action is going to affect the shoe as well. You're going to smoothen out or shape the shoe. So b'men me'garuro, what can you use to scrape off? Says I'm about the gav sakin again with the back of the knife. Amalei hausaba sama didach mikameha. Erase your statement. Eliminate your statement because of this. The Tani Rabbi Chia of a bright of Rabbi Chia ain migarin lo min al chadash v'no min al yashan. You're not allowed to scrape off not in a new shoe and not in an old shoe. Meaning that we do not differentiate between old and new shoes. We don't allow you to scrape it off because of the interaction with the shoe itself. You're not allowed to put oil on your foot while your foot is inside of the shoe or inside of a sandal. Problem with that is that you are then going to get the oil on the shoe, on the leather itself. You're tanning the leather, or you're doing some sort of work with regards to the leather. On the other hand, what you can do is, you can have a sachet raglo shemen, you can put oil on your foot, you can put the oil on your foot first, and then insert the foot into the shoe or into the sandal. That's not a problem, because you're not directly engaging the oil with the shoe. You're not actively doing it. You're doing it in an indirect manner. You put it on your foot, and now you insert your foot into the shoe. The fact that the oil now happens to get onto the shoe, that's not the normal way to do ibud. That is not something that we're going to worry about. Same thing with your body. Amasach kol gufo shemen. You can put oil on your entire body. Umigit agel agave ketavlia. And then you can roll around on top of a throw. And this is a leather throw. And so now you're rolling around on this leather throw. You're getting oil on the throw, which is definitely beneficial for the leather. Oiling the leather, softening the leather. This is part of that tanning process. But because you're doing it not in a direct manner where you would be ma'abed, because you do it in an indirect way, then it's permissible on Shabbat. Veinu chushei, you don't have to worry about any of these situations. That's only true if you just want to polish it, if you want to just get it to shine. But to tan it, to really work the leather, that is problematic. Mar says, first of all, of course, if your intent is to tan it and to work the leather, then certainly that is asur. Who's going to allow you to polish your shoes, smooth out and polish the shoes on Shabbat, or this leather on Shabbat? If you want the statement to read, this will read it, so this will incorporate your question, which is, Amar Rav Chisda, Hoshana ela shir letzachtecho. The amount of oil that you engaged with over here should only be sufficient oil that would have polished, shined the leather. Aval shir leabdo. If you have so much oil, whether it's on your foot or on your body, that would be sufficient oil to work it, to tan the leather, then it is asur. So there's the answer to the question. We don't want you engaging in a manner that, even though you're doing it indirectly, would be similar to the malacha. Don't let you use quantities that are similar to the malacha, whether it's letzachtech or leabed. So what we're doing is narrowing down the heter over here. We narrow it down that it can only be this much oil, so that it's clear that you're not being ma'abed. And even if you're going to do it with the amount of oil letzachtech, it's only in an indirect manner, so therefore we're avoiding this problem of you engaging in malacha on Shabbat. Tana banan. Lo yotze katan b'mna'al gadol. Katan may not go out with a big shoe. Aval yotzehu b'chaluk gadol. He may go out with a large piece of clothing, oversized clothing. The katan over here is not an age qualification, it's simply a size qualification. That a person should not go out who has a smaller foot with a bigger shoe. He can't go out with an oversized shoe, because what's going to end up happening is it's going to be slipping off his foot, and as it slips off, he's going to pick it up and carry it, because he'll just go without the shoes. On the other hand, by the chaluk, we're not worried about that. If he has oversized clothing on, we're not worried about the fact that he's just going to pull the clothing off, because he's not going to run around naked in the shuk. So we know that he's not going to pull the clothing out, so he's going to adjust it so that he can use it. Therefore, oversized clothing is permissible. Oversized shoes are impermissible. Woman should not go out with a torn shoe, a worn shoe or a torn shoe. You cannot use the shoe for chalitza. And if she does use it for chalitza, b'di'eved or b'di'avad, it's kshera to use. And she can't go out mirufat. Problem being that, and you see here that it's a woman, because it's gnai hula. It's something that is beneath her dignity. Something that people might make fun of her or laugh at her. And once they do that, what is she going to do? She's going to pull it off and carry it. One may not wear a new shoe on Shabbat. Be'eza min'al amro. Which min'al are we talking about that you can't do this? Be'min'al shalisha. This is a woman's shoe. Woman may not go out with a new shoe on Shabbat. Tani bar kafara, loshna ela shalo yatza ba sha'achat mi ba'od yom. That's only if she hasn't tested it out, tried it out before Shabbat. As long as she's worn it before Shabbat, right, it's not new, but it's also, we know that she's tested it out and it works and it fits her. Aval yatza bo me'er Shabbat mutar. If she's already used it or utilized it a little bit before Shabbat, that is enough. The difference being, Rashi says here, that we're specifically talking about women because isha makpedet im enu mikuvan midat ragla. Woman is very makpid about it fitting her foot properly and to the exact size. So if the shoe doesn't fit perfectly, the woman's going to be upset about it. She might take it off. She might be embarrassed about it. And therefore, all we want to know is that she tried it a little bit before Shabbat, so we know that she knows she's comfortable with the shoe, and that she'll continue to wear it on Shabbat and not take it off. On the other hand, the implications from this are that a man is less makpid on these issues. It's a little bit too big, a little bit too small. He'll just deal with it, and he'll go out with it. For the woman, it was a much more of a significant issue. Therefore, you need to break in the shoes before Shabbat, not go out with new shoes on Shabbat. Tani Chada, Shomtim Min'al Mi'al Gabe Imus. We have in our Gemara, the Girsa is probably likely Imum. V'tani Idach Ein Shomtim. We have two Braitot. One Braita that says you're allowed to take the shoe off of its form, whereas the other one says you cannot take a shoe off of its form. So look, Asha, that's not a problem. Ha, Rabbi Eliezer. Ha, Rabbonon. The authors of these two Braitot are different Tanaim who have different opinions. The Tanan. We have a Mishnah, like we've done in many other places, Kelim. We go to find out what is the designation of certain items. So in Kelim it says, Min al shagebe imum. You have a shoe that it's on its form. Rabbi Eliezer mitaher, v'chachamim mitamim. Eliezer says that is tahor, whereas the chamim say it's tameh. So now you have here a shoe that is sitting on the form. What is the status of this shoe? Is this shoe classified as a shoe, a keli? If it's already classified as a keli or a shoe, then you've had gemar malacha. And once you've hit Gemar Malacha, now it can be Mekabel Tuma, and that is the position of the Chachamim. But Eliezer's position is, as long as it's still on the form, then it doesn't get granted the designation as a shoe or Gemar Malacha. If it's not granted that designation, then it will not be Mekabel Tuma. Then, we want to know about Shabbat. On Shabbat, if something is classified as a kli, then it's not mukse. If something is not classified as a kli, then it is mukse. So the same machloket that has impact in terms of tuma will also have impact in terms of mukse. And therefore, that's what the Gemara says here. Rabbi Lezer, who believes it's not a kli to be mekabel tuma, will also say you can't take it off the form on Shabbat because you're picking up something that's not a kli. So you can't take it off. It's mukse. On the other hand, the Chachamim will believe it is mekabel tuma because it already has the same kli. They believe you can take it off the imum because the removal of the shoe is taking a kli, and that's not a problem. Hanichah l'Rava. This works well to Rava. D'amar, davar shemlach told yisur, ben l'tzorch gufo, ben l'tzorch muko mutar, shapir. This whole thing makes sense, according to Rava, who says that when you have a kli, shemlach told yisur, that whether it's l'tzorch gufo, whether it's l'tzorch mukomo, you're allowed to move it out. Now what the Gemara here is discussing is the issue of the form that is sitting inside the shoe. In order to release the shoe, it seems like that you didn't just take the shoe off the form, you pulled the form out of the shoe, you had to engage with the form itself. So now, what's the status of this form? It's a kli, shemlachto li'isur. The form is definitely something that you'd only engage in to do things that are otherwise asur on Shabbat. So that's the way he classifies a kli, shemlachto li'isur. So what is the dispensation to engage with such a kli? One is a tzorach gufo, which certainly is not the issue here. You're not utilizing it for anything. The other would be for tzorach mikomo. You need the place. So in this case, you need the place where the form is sitting. You want to put your foot in the shoe. Instead, the form is sitting inside the shoe. So it's in the place that you want. So therefore, you can pull it out because it's tzorach mikomo. So according to Rava, that you have this dispensation for Tzarach Mekomo by Kalisha Malachto Yisur, I can understand this whole scenario here. I pull the form out because I have a Kalisha Malachto Yisur that I have Tzarach Mekomo. Elo Abaye, Damar, the Tzarach Kufo Mutar, the Tzarach Mekomo Asur, when it comes to a Kalisha Malachto Yisur, we only permit Tzarach Kufo, no Tzarach Mekomo, Ma'ika Lameimar. What are you going to do over here? Why are you allowed to pull the form out of the shoe? Because the only dispensation would be for Tzarach Mekomo, and that doesn't exist over here. Because Bai says Tzarach Mekomo is not a good enough reason to engage with the Kli Shemlach Tol Yisur. It says, Achamai Skinan Birafui. Talking about that the shoe is loosely situated around the form. Therefore, you don't have to engage the form to get the shoe. You can just pull the shoe off the form without touching the form. If it's on tightly, then you'd have to pull on both of them to get it out, and then you'd have to engage with the Kli Shemlach Tol Yisur. Titania, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Imaya Rafui Mutar. If the shoe is loose on the form, then you can take it off. Taimo de Rafui. That's only because it's loose. Ha, lo Rafui. If it was not loose, lo, then you would not be able to take it off. So then Gemara says, Hanichah da Abaye, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, it works well according to Abaye, Damar, Davar Shemlach Tol Yisur, Letzorach Gufo, Mutar, Letzorach Mekomo, Asur. So Shapir, that makes sense. Because you would not be allowed to engage in this Kli Shemlach Tol Yisur, because the only heter here is Letzorach Mekomo, that doesn't exist over here. So the only way you get the form out of the shoe is if the shoe is loose, and you can just pull the shoe off without touching the Kli Shemlach Tol Yisur. Ela, the Rovo, Damar, Ben Letzorach Gufo, Ben Letzorach Mekomo, Mutar, Ma'ir Yerafoi. Why does it have to be loose? Even if it's not loose, you can just pull on the form and the shoe at the same time. You can pick up both of them because it's Betzorach Mekomo. Hai Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. That's Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Imaya Rafui, Mutar. That's dealing with Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. That says if it's Rafui, then it's Mutar. So this qualification, this differentiation that Rabbi Yehuda says, the Mafli ben Rafui, the Shein Rafui, was in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, who says that Manala Gabi Imum Lav Gemar Klihu. So then we're going back to the original Machloka between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer says a shoe on the form is not a kli, whereas the Chachamim say it is a kli. We were discussing Abaye and Rava's question only arises according to the Chachamim, who say you could take the shoe off on Shabbat, because it's a kli. So they were discussing it within the Rabbanon. What Rava suggests over here is that Rabbi Yehuda's statement that it's loose has nothing to do with what we were discussing just now. Because by the Chachamim it's a kli, and you can take it off. So we were discussing the imum, the form, and taking the form out, and that's a kli shum lachto disur. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda and says it's loose. We thought that when he says or qualifies and says it's loose, it's because of the form being muksa. The answer is no. Rabbi Yehuda has nothing to do with the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda is on Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to take the shoe off the form at all because it's not a kli, so it's muksa. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda, b'shem Rabbi Eliezer, and says, if it's loose, then it does get a shame kli. Rabbi Eliezer only says it's not a kli when it's still tight on the form. If you loosen it on the form, even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that then it is a kli. And if that's the case, you could take the shoe off the form on Shabbat. Nothing to do with kli shemachto isur, not kli shemachto isur, it's simply that now it is a kli and it's not muksa. Rabbi Yehuda is qualifying Rabbi Eliezer, and for Rabbi that's not an issue at all, because Rabbi's statement's made inside of the Rabbanon. And Rabbi Yehuda's statement's made inside of Rabbi Eliezer. With that, we end Perek HaTolin, and we begin the next Perek of Notel. Notel Adam et Beno, Ve'evin Biyado. A person can pick up his child, even though the child has a stone in his hand. Ve'kalkala, and he can pick up a basket, Ve'evin Betocha, and there's a stone inside. Obviously, the stone being Muksa. And here you're engaging with the Muksa through carrying something else. So either you're carrying the child, and the child has the Muksa in their hand, or you're carrying the basket, and the Muksa is inside. Now, obviously, the problem here is not a problem of Mavir Dalet Amot, as Rashi points out, you're in a chatzer. We're not dealing with the issue of carrying, we're dealing with an issue of muksa, and that's the only issue here. Umedal Talin Shumat Meya Im Tehora. You're allowed to carry Shumat Meya, which is worthless on Shabbat. The only thing you can do with Shumat Meya is burn it, and that you obviously cannot do on Shabbat. So it would be otherwise muksa on Shabbat, but since you have Tehora along with it, then you can carry it. Vima Chulin, or if you have Chulin there, because you have something that's Mutar, that allows you to carry that which is Asur. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Malinet Meduma Be'achad Meya. Rabbi Yehuda makes a statement, we'll get to later in the Gemara, an issue of Meduma. Meduma is a situation in which Truma and Chulin become mixed. If you have Truma and Chulin, they become mixed, then it forms something called Meduma, which is a mixture. It really means a mixture. Something that now presents a problem, because if you're a non-Kohen, you cannot eat the mixture because there's Truma inside of it. Midoraita, Minatorah, it's Batel Berov. As long as there's a Rov of Chulin, the Truma does not exist. The Chachamim imposed on Truma a stricter guideline, that Truma is not Batel, except for 100-1 or 101-1, that is the requirement of bitul with a gabei chuma. So over here we're talking about a situation in which there is rov chulin, there's more chulin than chuma, but it doesn't reach the threshold of the chachamim of being 100-1 or 101-1. In that situation, the chachamim say that you take out the amount of chuma that's in there and you give it to the kohen. You take out a representative amount of chuma from the mixture and then you give that to the kohen. So what Rabbi Yehuda says is af malin et meduma be'achad me'meya. You can take out that piece that the Chachamim require you to take out. You're allowed to take it out on Shabbat, even though in general you're not allowed to take off Trumot and Masrot on Shabbat because that is a problem of Mitakein. Over here, it's only like a quasi-Mitakein because technically it really is Mutar the Gamre. The Chulin exceeds the Truma. This is only a Chumra Derabanan that we said that you have to take off this extra piece. So it's only a Chumra Derabanan. When you take it out, it's not really like Mitakein. Amarova, otzi tinok chai, if you take out a live child, a live baby, v'kistalui b'tzavaro, and he has a sack, a bag, a wallet hanging around his neck, chayav mishum kis. It's a problem for carrying the kis. Tinok mate, if he's carrying out a dead baby, v'kistalui lo b'tzavaro, and he has this wrapped around his neck, patur, patur aval asur, but there's no problem of a chayav v'chatat. Tinok chai v'kistalui lo b'tzavaro, chayav mishum kis. He's chayav because of the wallet, l'chayav nami mishum tinok. Why is only problematic in carrying the wallet or the bag or the sack that's around his neck? What about the baby itself? We're obviously not talking about muksa over here. We're talking about carrying dalet amot. And we're saying now that the problem is carrying the item that's attached to the baby, not the baby itself. What about the baby? Why isn't that a problem? So obviously, this goes back to what we saw earlier in the Masech, the Rava, Kirav Natan Sfirile. He holds like Rabbi Natan, who says, Damar Chai Noset Atzmo. Any live being carries itself. Carries itself doesn't literally mean it carries itself, but it helps to move its weight or helps to adjust its weight. And by doing so, it's really like Shnaim Shasu. You're not really carrying the person. You are simply aiding that person, and they're aiding you, and therefore you have two people engaging in a malacha. So that's not chayav mi deoraita. Umar says, vilavata kis legabe tinok. If that's the case, that the baby's okay, why don't we say that the kis is insignificant with regards to the baby, and therefore you're really just carrying the baby. Along with it comes this kis, and therefore it should not be considered carrying. Milotnan. Then we see already earlier in the Masechta, et achai b'mita. If you carry out a live person on a bed, patur af alamita, you're not culpable for carrying the bed, because the only reason you're carrying the bed is so that you can carry the person on top of it. So the bed becomes batel to the person that you're carrying on top. You're really trying to carry the individual. The bed is just the means by which you carry the person. Shamita, tfeilo lo. The Mishnah there says, because the bed is subordinate to the individual. So that's what Gemara says. Mita legabi chai mevatli lei. A bed with regards to a live person is subordinate. Kis, the gabe teno, kloma vatudei. It comes to whatever this kis is. I'm not sure what's inside of it, but whatever it is, it's so important that the person is not mavatalit the gabe teno. It's not necessarily more, but he would not subordinate it to the teno. It has at least equal weighting in your eyes. Therefore, it's not subordinate to the teno. I would have maybe stated it even more so, is that the bed is the means by which you carry the individual. The kis here has nothing to do with carrying the child. It just has to be on top of the child, and therefore it should be problematic. Tinok mate, if you have a dead baby, v'kis talui b'tzavaro, and he has this sack or wallet around his neck, patur, then he is patur. L'chayev mishum tinok. What about the baby? What about carrying the baby itself? Now, over here, you do not have the dispensation of Rabbi Natan, the Chayin Oset Atzmo, because the baby is not alive. Why isn't there an issue with carrying the baby? Karova, Karabi Shimon, Svirle. Rava holds like Rabbi Shimon, Damar, Kol Malacha, Shein Tzricha, Legufa, Patur, Alea. Any Malacha that's in Tzricha, Legufa is Patur. We had this earlier in the Masechta with regards to a mate. If you take a mate out of the house, according to Rabbi Shimon, that's a Malacha, Shein Tzricha, Legufa. Because the reason for carrying on Shabbat, or the reason that carrying was done in the Mishkan, was to take item from point A to point B. It's because you wanted an item in point B, therefore you carry it from point A to point B. Over here, that's not true. By a mate, you don't want the mate in the other location, you want it out of this location. You want to remove it from point A, not necessarily get it to point B. So that's why it's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. The same must be true here. When taking out the mate, the assumption being that you're not carrying the baby to a destination, you're simply removing the baby from the current location, and that's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. Now what about the wallet itself? Why over here, by the tinok mate, is the wallet not a problem? Just before we said that the wallet is not batel, the gabi tinok, all of a sudden the tinok is mate, and the wallet is batel. So Rashi gives one reason. It was a toy of some sort that he played with. Agav merirei. Because of the bitterness, the avilut, the mourning that this parent has over the child, mevat lele the gabi tinok shemate. Below choshev le haishata. That moment, it doesn't have any significance to him. So because of the situation, the kis loses its significance and then becomes subordinate to the child, because the parent's focus is solely on the child and on the mourning for the child, and therefore the kis becomes irrelevant. When the child's alive, then the kis is significant because, again, then there is engagement both with the child and the toy that the child has. Tosafot gives another alternative, which is both what Rashi says. Inami, he says that it's also a malacha shein tzricha legufa. Once again, if you're carrying the toy for the baby, then it's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. If the baby is already dead and the toy or the kis is around the neck, then it's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. You don't need the kis anymore to go with the baby because the baby is no longer alive, and therefore maybe it's also a malacha shein tzricha legufa. It's not. So obviously we're going to have to now speak about our Mishnah, because here we just spoke about a child that is carrying something is problematic. Our Mishnah says carrying a child and a stone in the hand is not problematic. It's not. What are you going to do with that? Amre debe Rabbi Yanai, betinok sheesh lo giguim alaviv. Our Mishnah is talking about, we have to qualify the case in our Mishnah, that why is it not problematic? We see from the statement of Rava that when you carry something out and the other individual or the other person is carrying something with them, it's as if you're carrying directly that item. So over here we have the kis on the child. When you carry the child, it's as if you're carrying the kis, and it's problematic on Shabbat. Yet in our Mishnah, it says if you carry the child and the child carries a stone, that it's not as if you're carrying the stone, because we don't have a problem of you carrying mukse. Why is that? So we have a qualification here of the Beit Rabbi Yanai, that our case in the Mishnah is a unique case where it's a gaguin al aviv. The child is sick for his parent. He wants his father, and he needs something to pacify him. He needs something to stop him from having this feeling. So the stone was the way to pacify the child, and therefore now the stone is acting not just simply as muksa, not simply as something that the child is carrying, but it's actually preventing the child from becoming sick. So now, if you look at Rashi, the bottom Rashi on the lo imidu tilto shelo biyadayim b'makom sakana. So here we're talking about tilto, not direct carrying of muksa, indirect carrying of muksa. And the Chachamim were not mamid divrehem in the case of sakana. V'af agav d'lav sakanat nefesh gemura. We're not talking about a life and death situation here. If the child doesn't have the stone, he's not going to pass away. That's not the issue at hand. But ela sakanat choli. We're talking about simply becoming ill or falling ill. So this is what we call, or otherwise known on Shabbat, which is chola she'en bo sakana. Someone who becomes sick but has no sakana. So over here we see by Holy Shein Bo Sakana, the Chachamim wave their gzeirot or takanot, but makom that it's kelach hayad, in a case where it's only a mukse. So Tosfos points out, again, Tosfos makes this point, but I mentioned it now as well, which is that there's going to be a difference between direct engagement muksa and indirect engagement muksa. This heter only applies to indirect engagement muksa. We're not going to allow you to directly engage with muksa, even with a choli shein bo sakana. Here, it's because it's indirect that we allow you to do this. So now, my area, Evan, if that's the case, if we're dealing with sakana already, we're dealing with choli shein bo sakana, why are you talking about a stone? Afilu dinar. Why use the example of a stone, which is something that's useless on Shabbat? Why don't we talk about something that's real muksa on Shabbat, like money? If the child's carrying a coin that's doing this pacification, why don't we just say that's the case? Alama, Amar Rava, but didn't Rava say, Lo Shanu El Evan, Alva Dinar Asur. Rava already qualified the mission and said that the mission is only true by a stone, not true by a coin. So if the whole situation here is dealing with a Chol Shein Bo Sakana, why should we differentiate between a coin and a stone? They're both muksa. It's not a direct tilto. They both should be mutar in this case. Where it says there's a difference. Evan, inaflala, lo ati avu aliyatuye. A stone, if it falls, the father is unlikely to go then and pick up the stone that his child lost. As the pacifier, you can replace the stone. You can find something else. You'll be fine. Dinar, inafil ati avu aliyatuye. If the coin falls out of the child's hand, there in all likelihood the father will pick up the coin. He's not going to leave the coin there. It's something of value. So if it's something of value, we don't want the child holding something of value, because then the father will engage with the item when it falls out of the hand of the child. On the other hand, if it's something that is not of value and can be replaced easily, then we don't worry about it. Tanya Kavoti Derova, we have a braita that supports Rava's understanding. Amutzi kelav mikbalim umunachim al ktefo. Person who takes out his clothing folded up and on his shoulder, and he's carrying his shoes and his rings in his hand, chayav. In that case, that's called carrying. You're carrying the items. It's a problem on Shabbat. But if you wear them normally, you're wearing your clothing, you're wearing your shoes, you have your rings on your finger, then it's patur. Then it's not a problem. Now, hamotzi adam, person who carries another individual, v'keilav alav v'sandalav v'raglav v'tabudav v'yadov patur. If he carries this under individual and he's wearing all of his clothing and his rings and so on and so forth, then you're patur, again, for the individual because it's chayin osit, that's mo, and for the clothing because the clothing's all batel to the individual because they're part of his normal wear, so that's not called carrying. Right, patur of asur, because that's chayin osit, that's mo, it's only a heter midoraita, midorabanan, we still say it's asur. V'ilu hotzian kim mot shein chayav. So what they want to infer from this braita is, the braita notes three cases, and the Gemara is inferring the fourth case, which is the braita notes the first case, which is you have an individual himself who either wears his clothing or carries his clothing. When he carries his clothing, it's problematic. When he wears it, it's patur, but here probably means mutar. And then you have a second case in the braita, which is you're carrying another individual. The only case that the braita addresses when you're carrying another individual wearing their clothing. In that case, you would be patur. What happens if you're carrying another individual who's carrying his clothing? The Gemara infers that fourth case would be chayav. What does that show you? That shows you like what Rava just said. That Rava said to us that when you carry someone else or something else and they're engaged with muksa, it's as if you're directly carrying the muksa. And that's what you would infer from this braita. If you were carrying someone who was carrying clothing, it's as if you were carrying the clothing directly. It's as if you were doing it and doing the carrying directly and directly engaging with the clothing. Exactly what Rava just said. And that was the first statement we had in the Gemara today, which is Rava says that if you take out the tinok with the kis, it's as if you're directly carrying the kis. So this braita supports that understanding of Rava. How we do with our Mishnah is to reinterpret or qualify the Mishnah and say the Mishnah is an unusual case where it involves choli shein bo sakana, and therefore there's a dispensation to allow the child to carry the stone to pacify himself, even though normally that would not be allowed because it would be as if you were carrying the muksa directly. Okay, we'll stop over here.